And who would have thunk all those years ago this song came out, and we're still trying to find equal pay in many instances. The inequalities are crazy. And joining us today is, but we're getting there. International Women's Year, the greatest consciousness-raising event in history. Jocelyn Alcott, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about this movement, this new book, and what you're doing.
Yeah. So 1975 was the first of what became a series of UN women's conferences. And it was really the first major international gathering of that sort. And it became a turning point in the way, not just that we think about feminism, but the way that women's networking started to work. So we think now about all these non-governmental organizations, these international or transnational organizations. Those all really get going in 1975. And so it's a really interesting moment in the history of feminism. You know, I think, like you said in your introduction, a lot of the issues, when I went back to look at this, I thought that I would be seeing issues that we've long since resolved. And it's really striking how many of the issues that are up for debate in 1975 are still very much alive and well today.
Yeah. It's so true. Let's talk about the gathering of all of the women that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was so exciting.
Yeah, it's, it was kind of unexpected how exciting it was, which is that it started out, if you think about the UN, and you know, a lot of your listeners may not think about the UN if they can help it, but it's a pretty staid and bureaucratic organization. It has a lot of protocols to it, a lot of sort of traditions and expectations. And so that really very constrained and staid culture was coming smack up against the 1970s, which was, of course, not just about feminism, which was raucous in its own way, and all of these other social movements and liberation movements of various sorts, but also decolonization movements. So the UN itself had been completely transformed by, you know, really cresting waves by 1975 of decolonization throughout what was then called the Third World, in particular Sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. So your readers might, or your listeners rather, might recall that 1975 is when the Vietnam War finally concludes. Mm-hmm. So it's this moment in world history and in social history when all of this social turmoil is in play, and it's crashing right up against some of the more culturally conservative institutions of the time, which would include the United Nations. And the thing that happens in Mexico City that's a complete game changer is that the woman who organized the conference, there's really two events that are happening here. There's one that's this UN conference, which is very, it's all government delegations. They're called instructed delegations, which means your government tells you, you know, here's the parameters in which you can negotiate and no further. And then almost the very first time, it wasn't the first one, but it was the first of two or three that had these what are called NGO or non-governmental tribunes, so a parallel tribune of non-governmental organizations. And the woman who organized that, who had come out of the civil rights movement in Virginia and been really inspired by that, decided that rather than have it be a non-governmental meeting of what are called consultative status, or these kind of recognized establishment NGOs, so things like the YWCA or the International Association of Women, these kind of white glove organizations, she decides to open it up to anybody who wants to walk in the door. And as a result, it becomes radically diverse. She spends a ton of time and money trying to get women from the Third World, so from Latin America and Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa in particular, well, all of Africa really, to this tribune to be part of these conversations. And, you know, there are limits to what she can do.
I just want to remind everyone, we're talking about 1975.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And
a
time when there's a lot of, a lot of women of color in the United States refer to themselves as third world women. there's that kind of connection between of trying to establish solidarity between women who are fighting for their national liberation in places like Angola and Mozambique and Vietnam, and women of color in the United States. It's a very intense moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the decision to open all that up and say, let's just see what happens. And in fact, the organizers of this decide not only are they going to open it up, they're going to preserve all of this open space on the agenda just to create a forum for whatever women want to talk about. And it becomes a space for really, really intense fights and debates.
I love it.
The exciting thing about it.
Can you imagine everyone sitting out there having Professor Olcott as your professor? Your students at Duke, how lucky are they to have you as the professor of history at Duke?
How lucky are they to have you?
I would have loved to have had you as a professor. Oh, my gosh.
That's very kind of you. Thank you. We have wonderful students here. I can't complain.
Okay. But this was so significant because it really... Tell us why this was such an important event and where we are today, if you wouldn't mind.
Mm-hmm. So there's a few reasons it's important. One of the critical reasons, if you think just within the UN, UN development policy, and this is strange to think of now, if for people who pay attention to this, UN development policy now really always, I mean, women are really central to it. In development textbooks in 1975 never mentioned women. And one of the things that really motivates the women who organized particularly this NGO conference was that in 1974 there was this big UN population conference where people, as they point out, everyone seemed to forget who was having the babies, right? And so they were trying to think about fertility and not thinking about how women figured into that. And it got into a lot of issues about women's rights and also about issues of racism and racial discrimination because the population control efforts were really about controlling populations of color, right, of all kinds. And so mm-hmm. those two things got really intertwined at this moment in important ways. And that, I think, seeing those, and you can see, again, you see the roots of this somewhat in the civil rights movement. Seeing those together is really important. But the critical part of that is that for a lot of these women who came from, again, what they at that point called the Third World, and today we would probably call the Global South, or, you know, there's a lot of different terms, but the women coming out of these countries did not identify themselves with feminism. They saw feminism as this crazy North American idea, probably some form of cultural imperialism. So 1975 is the beginning of a moment when a lot of women, both women of color within places like the United States or the UK or women from these poorer parts of the world, start to say, wait, there's something for me in feminism and for my community and my family in what feminism has to offer. And so two things happen. Feminism changes these communities, and these communities pretty radically change feminism in important ways. And in ways that, so if you think about the way things played out in the Women's March in Washington right after the presidential inauguration,
yes,
that you really see the lessons learned from the 1970s of the importance of including all of these voices, and not just in a pro forma way or a kind of, you know, token way, but in a way that really lets those perspectives change how we understand our program.
You know, it's so fascinating how they were expecting 60 to 75,000 women in Boston. That was it. And, you know, over 300 to 400,000, I don't even remember what the latest numbers were in Boston, but we couldn't leave to march because there were so many of us in the common. It was no room for anybody to march.
It was the same thing happened in D.C.
Yeah. So we know that women are so powerful. Now what? You know, so we have these incredible moments,
mm-hmm.
these shining lights.
You know, it's interesting. This was a major conversation, as you can imagine, at this conference as well, because there was a concern that you have a big, you know, spectacular conference, and then everybody goes home, and that's the end. And you know, an extensive part of this conversation was saying, okay, how does this become the beginning of a movement? And I think we're seeing that with the Women's March as well, frankly. They've really made an effort from within the organization and from the bottom up to make this part of a more enduring movement.
Yeah. Professor, we're out of time, but thank you so much. Come back anytime. What's the best website? How can people find out more about the work you're doing?
You can go to JocelynAlcott.com, or my book is also on the Oxford University Press website.
Awesome. Thanks so much, and we'll be